Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, the Lakers have reportedly quietly asked around the league if there's any trade interest in Russell Westbrook. Plus, if Kendrick Nunn plays a ton, as Frank Vogel says he will once he returns, who's going to sit? We'll talk about that and much more coming up on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
So a lot of stuff to get to today, Andy, including news about Stanley Johnson and a 10-day contract on the horizon, likely meaning he'll be here for the rest of the season. Plus, Brian Windhorst at ESPN reporting the Lakers are trying to trade a couple other dudes at the end of the roster, Rajon Rondo-esque style deals. So we'll get to all of that. Do want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. The support for the podcast has really been great. We appreciate it. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Thank you for supporting that channel as well. The podcast on particularly on non-game days, Andy, like this one, gets up a little early. Great to subscribe there. But let's start with Westbrook. I'm not surprised at what I saw on Wednesday, the reporting from Sam Amick at The Athletic. The Lakers have, quietly asked around the league if anybody would be interested in acquiring Russell Westbrook. Hey guys.
Sam described it as, quote, covert interest in discussing a possible Westbrook trade with rival executives earlier this season. And then he pointed out a deal appears extremely unlikely before the February 10th trade deadline. And this is no disrespect to Sam, because we love Sam both professionally and personally. He's one of the best in the business as a reporter and just a human being. I did not need Sam to tell me that. I could have done that without any checking around.
That interest would be relatively low.
Yeah, or that it's just extremely unlikely. Like, I with zero digging around whatsoever, I've confirmed this for Sam.
Yeah, sources. So the real reporters do ask.
Yeah.
But but anyway.
But sometimes though, the real reporters,
not necessary.
Like they must recognize sometimes though, like guys like Sam and Mark Stein, Shams, like, the guys who get the most dirt, the most often, stuff like that. Every now and then they must realize, like, man, this is just kabuki theater. Like, I know what the answer is before, but I got to do the dance.
Got to do it right. So that was one thing. But the other thing is just, I realizing that it's not going to happen. It is kind of a stunning thing that, we're not even at the trade deadline. We're not even barely after the new year. And, this sort of thing has happened. I understand why. I understand why the Lakers would at least do their due diligence here. And I think all teams are almost always willing to talk about almost anybody, at least in some context. But the impetus behind checking to see if Westbrook could in fact be moved and this deal be unwound is telling to me in terms of how everybody feels that this has gone to this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's telling. The flip side of it, though, is everybody, including us, said this is either going to work extremely well, better than the skeptics predict, or it's going to work rather poorly for all the reasons that the skeptics predict. And if it's the latter, that means you're going to try to see if you can unwind the thing. I mean, it's actually not that shocking, only in the sense that it was always a very high risk, high reward type scenario. And we're in the risk part.
It's certainly not where I think we're hoping to be. He's not going anywhere. So, the idea that they're going to trade him is interesting on an intellectual level, the idea that they'd look into it, but it's on a practical level, it's not going to mean anything. It's not going anywhere. And so it's about making it work here. And, it was funny after Tuesday's game, so much focus has been regarding Westbrook about his adjustment to LeBron, his adjustment to Anthony Davis playing as a third superstar, whatever it might be, if you want to classify him as that. And I'm not necessarily sure you should, but that's a different conversation. It came up after Tuesday's game where he was asked about the notion of other players learning how to play with him. This on a night where he did not turn the ball over for the first time since 2016 at a game with no turnovers, a regular season game. This, I think, is kind of an underrated aspect of the Westbrook experience. Is so much focus is on him adjusting, him doing something different, him being coached differently, whatever it might be, that other guys really do have to learn how to play with him. And that's a process they haven't gone through very much just because of the lack of continuity.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When Russ was talking about that or hearing other guys talk about it in terms of their relationship on the court with Russ, it reminded me a lot of what we saw with the process of different players learning how to play with Kobe. Mm-hmm. And they're not for exactly the same reasons. I mean, Kobe, A, was just better than Russell Westbrook, period. He was also less erratic. Like, Kobe could be unpredictable on the court, but he was far less all over the place than Russell Westbrook. But
there was a lot more subtlety to Kobe's game than right. Russ's, to say the least.
Right. But in there still was an element of adjustment that came with playing with somebody like Kobe, who was just such a huge force of personality as a player, as, mm-hmm. you know, a person, as a leader. And there was an intimidation factor. There was very much a, you know, Kobe over time, I think learned the importance of understanding his teammates more and why it actually mattered. And he got better with it. But at the end of the day, Kobe was still we're doing it my way, get in line or get the hell out of my way. And, you know, playing with him was something that typically took guys a long time to get used to. Like, it's not a coincidence that the guys who thrived the most with Kobe were generally the ones who just spent the most time with him, you know? And
yeah,
Derek Fisher used to talk all the time about how, and this was somebody that Kobe obviously had a terrific on-court relationship with. You know, he's the teammate I think he valued the most out of anybody. Mm-hmm. Fisher used to talk all the time about how you have to protect your space with Kobe because otherwise he will bulldoze you. And there are times where you have to do the thing that he doesn't want you to do for the sake of the bigger picture, not just for the team, but for you as a player. And mm-hmm. that was something that it took a lot of guys getting used to, like the idea that Kobe would get pissed off about something, he'd MF you, and the next day the sun was going to come up. Like, it was going to be okay. And again, mm-hmm. it's not apples to apples with Russ.
Yeah, right.
But the idea of adjusting to a really big, very specific presence on the court, like even playing with LeBron, who's an exceptionally inclusive player on the court, can take
it
time
takes time.
For a lot
but there's a massive difference, which I think is part of what made the trade so risky and some of the fit issues that people talked about that makes it fundamentally different and more problematic when you talk about players adjusting to him than it is with Kobe and it was with Kobe and it is with LeBron. We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big businesses, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere. Synchronize online, in-person sales effortlessly. Stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. Shopify allows customers to expand their reach online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integration and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. You gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. It's more than a store. Shopify grows with you. So go to shopify.com/lockedonNBA, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and to get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/lockedonNBA. Again, all lowercase right now. shopify.com/lockedonNBA.
So, Andy, what makes the whole Westbrook experiment so fascinating, one of the things, because there are legion, is that fit question, the adjustment question, all that stuff. You know, you are correct. Playing with Kobe was a thing, and it took guys a long time to learn it. And playing with LeBron is a thing, and it takes people time to understand it and learn it. I think by superstar standards, pretty damn easy to play with LeBron compared to a few others. The difference is, and I know you pointed out, it's not strictly apples to apples. And here's where I think the apples really don't line up.
Become oranges.
Yes, as the expression goes. Somebody should write that down. brilliant stick. I see what you did there. Kobe was, without dispute, the best player on the team.
Yeah.
LeBron, without dispute, the best player on the team, or at the very least, sort of the sun around which the team orbits.
Heliocentric.
That's right.
That's
exactly what that means. Things revolving around the sun. That's very good.
The sun, by the way, Brian, same color and shape as an orange.
I always picture the sun more as yellow than orange.
It can be orange. Some oranges, frankly, are a little more yellow. Keep talking. I'm going to Google what color is the sun.
Okay. Yeah, remember when I babbled on too long on Wednesday's show? I think it's your turn now. But anyway, the difference with Westbrook is obviously he's not the best player on the team. And it is a thing when you talk about Russell Westbrook, when you talk about Ben Simmons, people would make this argument, I think, before they got over it with somebody like Lamar Jackson or whatever. You very unique players with that have certain flaws, whatever they might be. Simmons, Westbrook, great examples. You have to do a lot potentially to adjust your team to them. And are they worth it is the question. And so, when you start to ask that question of how much do guys have to adjust to playing with Russ? That's one question. And another question is, how hard is it just sort of to learn how to play? Like, do you want Anthony Davis and LeBron James to really be adjusting a lot of what they do to accommodate the strengths of Westbrook? If you can do it in a way that doesn't diminish the other players, it's great. But, trying to figure that out, how many concessions you make to the guy who isn't your best player is, I think, a fascinating wrinkle to me in this whole equation. And the Lakers, I think, have rightly pushed more towards it's Russ who's going to have to make a few concessions here and there, be a little more attentive off the ball, be more attentive defensively, set more screens and stuff like that, and figure it out that way rather than we're going to change everything we do to accommodate him. And I don't think Russ, by the way, is asking them to do it. I just think that's the direction they've gone.
No, I mean, although, and two things. First of all, according to sciencefocus.com, the actual color of the sun is white. So I guess we were all wrong. There's a lot more that goes into it, and I'll link the article in the show notes. But just to settle this for now.
I'm sure people will click like crazy on that.
Locked on sun. The other thing, though, is as far as though with Russ is, I remember you described him, and I thought this was a very good way of putting it, as a lot of house in terms of the trade form, like the idea of when you say you have a family of three and you move into a 14-bedroom, 16-bathroom house.
It's a lot of house
for three people. Russell Westbrook is, in a lot of ways, a lot of house. And there's a lot that comes with Russell Westbrook. And he has never seemed like a player that is big on adjusting, the sort of house that he is. It doesn't mean that he never adjusts. But, Westbrook has alluded to, including after the Kings win, that he sometimes gets told to do a lot of different things, that his role changes a lot. He described himself as doing everything from hanging around in the dunker spot to the things that you would do typically as a point guard. And there have been times where Russ has, in my opinion at least, expressed some exasperation with what doesn't feel like consistency in that role. And there's a reason that I say he is the least subtle player in the NBA. So everything that is going to be asked of him is very loud, and the little things you were talking about before, like, either setting screens or some stuff that role players,
the off-ball cutting, things like that.
Like, these are all going to feel like extremely big things to Russ. And I think at times very contradictory things in terms of how he plays as a player, how aggressive he considers himself. Even if you can very reasonably make the argument, they're not contradictory because they're all part of a larger picture. I think to Russ, they may feel contradictory.
I think it's this is the distinction between being the best player on the team or one of the best players, the second best player, whatever it is, the co-best player, around it. You are the at least a co-sun around which stuff revolves, and being a planet. And on this team, Russ is much more planet than he is sun. And I think he's doing the best he can, but this is so much of this gets framed into what Russ is willing to do and what he's not willing to do. And I don't always think that's even the right framing, because I'm sure he is capable, and it is a fallacy that Russ hasn't set any screens or doesn't move off the ball this year. Like, he's been doing some of those things. He is in a situation where he is, being asked to play slightly differently after how many years in the league. And I don't think it's often a matter of Russ is unwilling to. I think these are things that he'd have been doing in year six if it was just a fundamental part of his game. And, he is, I think, very sensitive about how whether it's the perception that he is a team killer, a star killer, and all that kind of stuff, hurts what are some remarkable accomplishments for somebody who is, one of the 75 best players to play. And that's, I think, what he's getting at. Like, when he says, like, I know how my game is defined, I know what got me to this point, and it's X, Y, and Z, it's not A, B, and C. He's just being asked to do other letters in the alphabet because he is no longer a person around which you pattern your team. And, Carmelo Anthony went through that. Other guys have gone through that. And it is a difficult thing for a lot of players to do. I think he's trying, and I think there's still hope. And he's had more good games than bad ones over the last 5 weeks in the aggregate. So, I mean, there's positive stuff to look at, I think.
No, I absolutely. I mean, both of us have stressed a lot throughout this season that on balance, Russ has been more good than bad. Having said that, though, we saw Vince Carter, for example, evolve a ton from a superstar player to somebody that very happily embraced role player aspects that were being asked of him. Granted, it helped that he was a much better shooter than Russell Westbrook to begin with, because
you can't
become a 3-and-D player if you can't shoot and stuff like that. But
Russ's case, D.
Right. But Vince Carter was never known for being able to defend until he was really asked, and then he figured it out. So, there are certain things with Russ that come down to, say, attentiveness. That has, to me, less to do with, hey, I got to change who I am as a game. It's just, are you thinking about it? Are you prioritizing it? Because Russ, though, when you hear him talk, he is still somebody who very clearly feels like my way will win games. And to be fair to Russ, for all the crap that he takes as somebody who's only been to one finals and he's never carried a team by himself past a certain point in the playoffs, and he's had some playoff failures, to be sure, if you look at the entirety of Russ's career, there's a remarkable amount of winning. He has very rarely in his career not been in the playoffs. That is really, really difficult to do over an extended period of time.
As a sports culture, we tend to we diminish regular season winning as easy when it isn't. Chris Paul gets bagged on all the time. The amount of winning and success Chris Paul has had in the league is stunning, but hasn't gotten to the top level of it. So. This is not going to be the last time we talk about Russ. I do think having Malik Monk emerge as a real potential go-to scorer will make it easier for Westbrook in the fourth quarter, because he doesn't have to be a scorer, which I think will bring out and play to his better instincts as a scorer. But
generally speaking, it's best for Russ if he doesn't feel like he has to do anything.
Yeah.
I think that is when things go well for Westbrook, is when there's no particular like debt, you know, death or, you know,
well, you're also not forcing him into positions or styles of play or types of, mm-hmm. of things that aren't playing to his strengths. You know, there are yeah. certain times when you need a certain type of scoring, a certain type of shooting or whatever, and you have to kind of square peg round hole Westbrook into that. And he's just not a good, his round hole parts are phenomenal, but you know, his shortcomings are equally glaring, as we've talked about. Again, he's so interesting as a concept as much as anything. It explains as much as anything why we spend so much time talking about him. But let's talk about Kendrick Nunn, because he is on his way back relatively soon, it seems like Frank Vogel said over the course of the week. What does it mean? Because Frank says he's going to play a ton. So that means somebody else is going to have to sit. We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online would like to wish you a happy new betting year as they continue the march to the playoffs and beyond. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering for 2022, the new year, and a new updated desktop and mobile website. To sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest, easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the games start.
A couple housekeeping things before we get to Kendrick Nunn. The Lakers are expected on Thursday to sign Stanley Johnson to a 10-day deal. They'll presumably sign into a second 10-day deal after that. Remember, the first one he signed with the Lakers was not a normal 10-day contract, which you're only allowed to do twice based on CBA rules. This was a hardship thing related to COVID. So the Lakers expect to bring him back presumably for 2 10-days, and then they'll sign him for the rest of the year. The reasoning behind that is simple flexibility. Shorter contracts yes. potentially allow for a little bit more maneuvering in those interim 10 days. Other news kind of related
to that.
It's not
a luxury tax concern thing.
It is not a financial thing. He makes the same amount of money either way.
Right.
Along those lines, though, the Lakers have already traded Rajon Rondo in a move that will save them some money and give Rondo somewhere to play. Brian Windhorst of ESPN reports the Lakers are interested in similar deals around DeAndre Jordan and Kent Bazemore that would open up roster spots for buyout guys, for anybody else they might be interested in.
Or it's just sweetener for a Russell Westbrook deal.
Right. If you're okay, fine. We'll give you Kent Bazemore.
Done.
guys, we held out for Bazemore and it worked. Oh man, I had high hopes for him when they signed him. Anyway,
that was way off.
These are deals that are, you know, much more designed to save the Lakers a little bit of money so that if they do get a player to commit to them on the buyout market, whatever it might be, they don't have to cut one of those guys and eat the money. As fantastic a game show as that would be, as we discussed the other day. So that's all housekeeping stuff to keep track of going forward. But meanwhile, Kendrick Nunn.
Really, the most interesting thing, really quick about that, before we get to Kendrick Nunn, is just the idea of whether or not the Lakers would be willing to sacrifice draft capital in order to move DeAndre.
Do you throw a second rounder in or something like that? One of real value to save the money as opposed to cutting someone,
because that's something that will upset fans if they're willing to sacrifice. You know, second round picks do have value. They do matter, particularly for a team like the Lakers that gave up so many in the Anthony Davis. They gave up so much draft capital, period, in the Anthony Davis deal, which, fine, justified. But if you are willing to sacrifice that just to save a few bucks, that is something that I think will upset fans, and I get where they're coming from.
So if Kendrick Nunn comes back and he plays a ton of minutes, you know, Frank Vogel has said they want to look at him in all kinds of different combinations. It could be as a starter, it could be coming off the bench, but they need to see him next to the superstars and really need to see what that looks like. And rightly so. I mean, coming into the season, his presence was really considered to be one of the most important coming in that supporting cast. If he plays a ton of minutes, Andy, who gets squeezed? Because this is an interesting conundrum the Lakers face.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about that, Brian, because, I mean, there's obvious candidates, somebody like Wayne Ellington, who hasn't been playing much anyway. He is somebody that we always thought about as possibly along the fringes of the rotation anyway. Like somebody
almost like I always pictured him as either playing 28 minutes a game or none.
Yes. Yeah. And it feels like it's moving more in the Nunn direction.
That is the impression I'm getting.
You know, it could also affect the amount of play that THT gets if what we saw from Sacramento against Sacramento is more of a blip than, say, a direction that he's heading, like a better trend. But I was also thinking about it, like it could be Kendrick Nunn because of his ability to score. And also, if nothing else, operate an offense as like a secondary ball handler, you know, like a combo guard, point guard. It could maybe take away some minutes from LeBron, or it could take away some minutes from Russ. Like it could ease some of that burden on those guys, or even eat into Carmelo Anthony's minutes, even though the two of them are on complete opposite ends of the spectrum positionally. You know, the scoring that you would look for from Carmelo Anthony could theoretically be provided, depending on matchups, by Kendrick Nunn, or, you know, what you need from LeBron over 5 minutes. Maybe you can get by a little bit easier with Nunn out there than we've seen this season with him unavailable. So like the idea of, it's an interesting question of who gets squeezed versus who might just see some minutes shaved in a positive way.
I think that is a really interesting way of framing it. And one that, I'll be honest, I hadn't really thought about, because I've just grown accustomed to the idea that LeBron James is going to have to play a ton of minutes on this team for it to work. You know, even, you know, you look at the numbers of, you know, the plus minus without LeBron on the floor, whether they're playing big or small, and it's still not good.
Nope.
But you're right. Like, that's certainly the hope. If you have none, and, you know, you have this found money in Reeves, and, you know, Malik Monk is to some degree found money in terms of the full range of things, improving as a defender, showing off, I think, a little bit more ball handling and playmaking. Not that you want him running an offense, but a decent passer and stuff like that. Can you find ways to save 2 minutes a night, 3 minutes a night from LeBron, 2 minutes a night, 3 minutes a night from Westbrook, whatever it might be? That's certainly the hope. I don't know if, I will say this, I don't know if they have time to get there, because for those groups, I think particularly to gel without the stars around, particularly when you have AD coming back late in this process, we don't know for sure when Nunn is coming back either. They're not going to, those supporting groups sometimes take a little bit, it takes a little more time to kind of find the right combination of players. But I think that would be phenomenal if they could figure out a way to add a player like Nunn and not have to squeeze a different supporting player that they'd like to keep on the floor and rest LeBron. That's a great outcome if they can get
that. I mean, here's the thing, though. If Nunn is going to play a lot, like Frank Vogel said was going to be the case, and look, they need him out there on the court to help the team. They need him out there on the court if he's going to be a trade asset. Like one way or the other.
They need to play him to find out if he's going to be able to do any of that stuff anyway.
Like however you define Kendrick Nunn's utility for this team this season, they need him out on the court. If he's going to be playing a lot, then it means by definition, they're going to have to do some adjusting anyway. Like there's no way to do this without some type of tinkering and adjustment and reconfiguring if he's going to play at all. Like,
it's just like, you know, you mentioned
25 minutes for Kendrick Nunn, but I'm just saying 25 minutes for Kendrick Nunn is likely going to, unless he just takes out one guy from the rotation, I think is going to lead to some reconfiguring regardless. They may not be ideal.
Well, obviously, I mean, they're going to have to reconfigure. So, like, how they reconfigure, like, they're not going to play 11 guys, they're not going to play 12 guys. Like, certain guys are going to sit. And, you know, Vogel kind of intimated that after the game on Tuesday that, you know, practice on Monday when they were talking about Nunn, that, you know, somebody is going to kind of have to sit for a little bit while we work Kendrick in, because we're not going to play 11 dudes. You know, he's now never that explicit about it, but that's kind of how I interpret a lot of what he was talking about. And it is meaningful, deeply meaningful, if that guy is THT. Like, if, you know, if the combination that they come up with means the THT sits, that is incredibly important for this team, both in terms of his future development, both in terms of decisions that they've made around the roster over the course of the year. And obviously, THT as trade bait being benched by the team that signed him is not a welcome development.
Well,
I mean,
well, here's the thing. I mean,
obviously, adjustments are coming, but what those adjustments look like are really important. But significant members of the rotation to this point are going to sit. Figuring that out and getting that balance with 20 games left. This is truly one of those things I think they would have loved to have done over the first 25 games as opposed to the last.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is where they're at. They got no other choice.
All right. So one more day this week before the Lakers take the floor on Friday night against Atlanta. They are scheduled to practice on Thursday. Another home game, home practice they can have ahead of a home game. A really significant game against a struggling Hawks team, a chance to go 4-0 against this weak portion of the schedule before they get to Memphis on Sunday. I want to thank everybody again for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day. Reminder, subscribe to Locked On Lakers on YouTube. We'll see everybody on Friday.